Well, g'day there, and welcome back to Convergently Speaking. So personality and the cost of specialization. The idea of the cost of specialization might be something you're already familiar with. It's certainly a concept that's out there. It's not something that I came up with. And in short, the concept of the cost of specialization is simply that we all have limited time, energy, and resources. And so the very nature of focusing on one thing means that you're neglecting, well, in that moment, you're neglecting everything else. To become good at one thing, you have to decide to become not good or at least less good at something else. And I think for anyone that's passed beyond the age of, you know, maybe 25 or 30, when you've already lived a few years of your adult life, the reality of this becomes more real as you realize that there are things that you can no longer do or things you can no longer pursue. Your options become limited. For example, if you've chosen to become an engineer as your career, to then go off and become a lawyer realistically would be quite difficult. Obviously, people do make these significant career changes, but you know, for most people, it's only once, maybe twice in a lifetime. So I think probably most of us experience this dynamic where because we chose one thing, it meant by the nature of that, we're actually not choosing a whole bunch of other things. So when it comes to personality type, the cost of specialization is a concept that I also think is very, very useful. When I was thinking how to lay out this episode, I was thinking about the fact that since I started this podcast, I've kind of addressed and gone in and out on the topic of Myers-Briggs, but I've probably never given a nice little succinct overview of some of the core parts of the system. And it's a tricky tension to walk here because some people will be coming into this podcast with, you know, pretty reasonable understanding of Myers-Briggs and don't want to be bored to tears by what they see as really introductory stuff. However, I think a lot of you are probably aware of some or all of the Myers-Briggs dichotomies, which is the introvert versus extrovert, sensing versus intuition, feeling versus thinking, and perceiving versus judging. Options in terms of working out a personality type. But I'd hazard a guess that you're not so familiar with what is referred to as the cognitive functions. Now, I've referred to that in the past, and especially the episode I did with Betsy from memory, you know, we talked a bit more technically about this stuff. Anyway, in short, the way it works with Myers-Briggs is that in addition to the dichotomies that I just went through, there are also 8 cognitive functions. And cognitive functions are literally as they sound. They're functions of the mind. And out of these 8 cognitive functions, all of us have 4 main ones, 4 that are inherently a part of our personality type. So all of the 16 Myers-Briggs personalities have 4 out of these 8 possible functions. However, out of these 4, only 2 of them are we really adept at, or really naturally, are we really, let's say, naturally gifted at, skilled at. So there's 8 functions. We have 4. We do 2 well, and out of those 2, our very first one is the main way in which we see the world. It's the filter that we see the world. And so if you know what your Myers-Briggs personality type is, you can actually just jump onto a search engine and type in, say you're an ESFJ, type in ESFJ cognitive functions, and you'll get a whole bunch of results from that. And if you go to the image viewer, you can get a visual on what those functions are. So there is a formula for working out if you're this type, what functions you have. But I find the easiest way for people is just do a search and look it up. And at the same time, you can get more information about what those functions actually mean. So how does this relate to the cost of specialization? In the typology world, there's a suggestion that a lot of people ascribe to that our Myers-Briggs personality type has somewhat of a genetic basis or a nature basis versus nurture, and that our Enneagram type is more of a environmental or nurture-based dynamic. However, there does seem to be a nurture and environmental component to our Myers-Briggs personality type. I don't want to get into the weeds on this. It's something you can easily find the debates online about. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that so for whatever reason, and as I said, it's not entirely clear how this works, early in life, when we're developing who we are, when we're developing a sense of identity, when we're developing our coping strategies and psychological defense mechanisms for getting love and care and surviving in the world, which is obviously a really harsh environment when you're a baby and totally reliant on others or even a toddler, we start to emphasize developing two out of our main four cognitive functions and really neglecting the other four, which are technically known as the shadow functions. They exist within us, but they're not a part of our primary personality. And by nature of developing these first two, these second two are neglected. Now, just to confuse things a little bit more, or maybe to make things a little more clear, our very first cognitive function is actually the mirror image opposite of our fourth. And our second cognitive function is actually the mirror image opposite of our third. So when we're developing our first function, which, for example, might be our sensing function, we're simultaneously ignoring or giving less time and attention to its opposite, which is always going to be an intuitive function, because sensing and intuitive are at opposite ends of the spectrum in this framework. We'll say opposite ends of the spectrum, but more accurately, they're two sides of the same coin. And by contrast, if we have an intuitive function first, which is what I have, we by default tend to neglect the sensing function. Now, this might sound all well and good. You know, for most people, it's pretty simple to grasp that you can't be an expert at everything. And it's a good and helpful thing to focus on what you're good at and not get yourself too uptight or stressed out by the things that you're not good at. And I don't disagree. The issue comes, however, that to be a good and healthy and functioning and balanced person, we actually need all four of our functions kind of online, kind of being used. And in a perfect world, we'd actually be using all eight regularly and appropriately in the right place and context. However, at least from my perspective, this isn't possible. Nobody is totally in balance. We all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, and in a more like pessimistic framing, you know, we all have genius parts to us, and we all have neurotic or childish or highly dysfunctional, unsophisticated parts of us. Personally, I have no issue with looking at things through this light. I think this forms part of what is beautiful about humanity, and makes us all interesting. The most brilliant, genius people throughout history have also been some of the most neurotic or dysfunctional, and so on and so forth. Anyhow, the point I'm making is that we all overuse our first two functions, or we all over-focus on our first two, and we tend to neglect our second two. So we're all out of balance. The thing is that despite me talking about these functions as four individual and separate entities, there's actually only two entities at work here. Because the first and the fourth and the second and the third functions are actually two sides of the same coin, it means that whenever our first function, so for example, again, it might be the sensory function is present, is on, is doing something, by the very nature, its mirror image opposite is also there too. Actually, a really good example of this might be thinking and feeling. It doesn't matter if you're a thinker as part of your personality. You, of course, always have a feeling component to you. And whenever you're using your thinking, whenever that's kind of activated and it's doing its thing, your feeling's still there. That can't actually be switched off. It can just be pushed to the side or sort of turned down. So I'm getting quite technical here, but bear with me a moment longer. We're almost there. So basically, the cost of specialization is that for us to have these first two cognitive functions as strengths and be our genius and be the things that we do really well, we neglect these other two. And the paradox, or almost like the irony of this, is that once we've developed our first two functions to a reasonable level, we're actually impeded on growing them and developing them any more unless we get the second two to sort of, how can I say, like catch up or also develop. Because these functions are two sides of the same coin, you've got a dynamic where if you neglect, for example, your feeling function too much, it will actually impede on your capacity to use your thinking function. It's sort of like having your feeling develop to the level of a 5-year-old kid and then developing your thinking to 10, 20, 30, 40. At a point, your thinking is going to be impeded by, for example, toddler-like or child-like feeling reactions. And so it doesn't matter how smart or developed your thinking is, if you don't have a reasonable amount of emotional intelligence, you're going to keep getting tripped up. And the other little part I want to mention related to all this is that what most people see of us, or what we show to the world, is for the most part our first two functions. These are the things that we do naturally, pretty unconsciously, and feel really good to do, feel really good to use. You know, no one's going to go out there and spend the majority of their life operating in their weaknesses. That's not going to be fulfilling, and it's just not going to be effective. And so often when we look at someone and we have a, you know, fairly superficial to moderate amount of interaction with them, maybe we see them on social media, we see them doing their strengths and we don't actually see the weaker parts of their personality. And then, of course, if we maybe end up moving in with this person, go on a holiday with them, or have some greater degree of interaction with them, all of a sudden these weaker parts of their personality start to show up. Their neuroses, or their odd beliefs, or difficulty framing stuff, or difficulty doing certain things, and then that all starts to show up. And from my own life, actually me being here recording the podcast is quite a good example. As someone with intuition and feeling as my first two cognitive functions, I'm naturally skilled but also orientated towards firstly the conceptual, the big picture type thinking, that's the intuition, but then also the emotional and people dimension to life. So talking to people about ideas is a really natural thing for me. It's a flow state. Now it's something I've had to learn and grow and develop, but let's say I had the wiring there to be able to do that. And by rights, therefore, there's a bunch of stuff that I'm less good at, that I'm weaker at. And so for me, that is my thinking and my sensing function. But for the sake of simplicity, I'm just going to talk about my intuition versus my sensing functions. As I said earlier, these functions, they're two sides of the same coin, or they're also referred to as polarities. So what you see, or at least hear from me, is me doing a lot of my intuition. It's coming with a lot of conceptual, quite abstract ideas and talking about them and hopefully putting them in a logical or workable form. And this is how I show up in the world. What you're not seeing, however, is my sensing function in any major way. Now, you have probably wondered why I haven't released a podcast for a few weeks. And I could give you a really nice articulate list of reasons as to why this hasn't happened, but they'd be bordering on excuses. The reason I haven't recorded a podcast for a while is because despite all my work and effort on it, I'm still weak at navigating the sensory world. I'm still weak on setting schedules, maintaining routine, and just generally physically doing stuff. I live in my head a lot. And you can see by the amount of podcasts I have released that this is something I'm not too bad at this point. I mean, many INFJs, my personality type, or even me 10 years ago, would start something and then lack the skills and ability to create the structure to actually keep this thing going. So one of the reasons that I didn't record for a week is because I was sick and I was feeling hazy and a bit dizzy, and I just couldn't, you know, I wasn't in a space where I could put my thoughts together. Now, in times gone by, I would have said, yeah, okay, fair enough, Dan, give myself a break. That's a good explanation. However, now with a bit more conceptual understanding, I can see that another person with a different set of cognitive functions and a different specialization within their personality would have just recorded extra. They would have had systems and routines and stuff in place where they would have been ahead of the game with their recording. And so if they had to have a week or two off, it really wouldn't matter. So I wanted to give you just that one personal, tangible example of how this operates in my life, just to show that because I focused on developing my intuition, I've by my very nature been incapable of focusing as much attention on my sensing. And actually, one group I've been studying with lately talks about this like an addiction. We're actually addicted to doing our first two functions. I'm addicted to staying in my conceptual, intuitive world. Because the sensing world just doesn't feel as good. And of course, because I'm not as good at it, there's a bit of a self-perpetuating thing where I want to stick with what I'm good at. Just to give you one more example, which is one of the simplest examples within the Myers-Briggs system, is the extrovert versus introvert dichotomy. For those of us that are extroverts, which means we spent the most time and energy on developing a function that is extroverted, meaning it's out there in the real world, as opposed to inside of us, those people have an advantage where they're often quicker in real time and more present to the external, more orientated to the external here and now world. It feels natural to them. It feels more at home. However, because they've emphasized this developing of their extroverted world, their cost of this specialization is not developing the introverted world. They've not developed the slower, more measured, maybe more considered parts of them. So for example, an extrovert may be better at getting more stuff done. They might have more energy to actually invest themselves into things. However, they might rush into things and not reflect long or deeply enough on what they're actually doing. So they might get more done, but not put their time and energy into the right places. And alternatively, those that are introverts may have all the good plans and ideas and thoughts and depth of analysis, but struggle to actually get moving in the real world. So this is just another example of how the cost of specialization can play out in a personality. And now it's a topic for another podcast, but just to tag it in your mind, just to start thinking about how this plays out in the real world in our relationships. You know, if you've got two functions that you do really well, two others that you do all right, and then four that are kind of not even on the radar, and if it's not actually possible to get all eight functioning in balance, then of course the obvious solution to this problem is to get other people around you who can actually fill in some of the gaps based on the functions that you're not good at and they are good at. And so this plays out in romantic relationships, but also workplace contexts, or even like a share house situation. And for me personally, I think this is a great explanation as to why humans need each other, and also a really useful model and framework for understanding how humans can connect and relate to one another better. The how of all this, however, is topic for another day. For now, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that this made some sense, that I explained the technical stuff well enough that you're able to follow on, and that that's a good foundation and framework to build on when I circle back around to this stuff again in the future. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time on Convergently Speaking.